Blog Talk Radio.
Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We've got a great program lined up, and joining me in studio is Jonathan Field, our radio producer. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
And coming to us from our satellite office in the Gulf is our advisory board chair, Ron Bachman. Hey, Ron.
Good morning. Good morning from Destin, Florida.
There you go. Well, great to have everyone here today, and appreciate all our listeners joining us on this summer morning. Here, again, our guest today, we're going to start out in about 10 minutes with Cammie Haynes with Tango Health, really talking about a pretty important issue to employers across the country, and that is crunch time for the final steps to HSA compliance. And they're really an outsource provider to help employers really manage this complexity and, you know, stay in compliance. And then following Cammie will be Seth Ravine with Aclaris, and Aclaris has developed a new benchmarking tool for benefit administrators that really helps administrators better advise their employer clients on ways to save money. So two interesting technology discussions on two really important pieces of the pie. You know, how do you stay in compliance, and how do you help your employer clients, you know, manage costs? So it should be an interesting program today. I want to take a minute to thank our radio sponsor, Aflac. You know, the leader in voluntary and supplemental benefits. And, you know, Aflac's kind of current message for the market is, you know, how voluntary is becoming really an essential benefit in these new high deductible plans on exchanges. And really the importance of both the health and the non-health side of voluntary benefits and educating and enabling employees and their families, the consumers, to really make the right choices to manage risk and manage their lifestyle. So I want to thank Aflac. Everyone knows you can find Aflac at Aflac.com. We thank them for the sponsorship. We thank them for this message that they're working with us on to get out the market. It's a very important one, right, Jonathan? I mean, voluntary is an essential benefit, very important one. Well, we're hard at work on our next conference, Private Exchange Forum. Actually, hard at work at both Private Exchange Forum, and then September 8th through 9th in Baltimore, and then IHC Forum coming up November 8th through 9th in Las Vegas. And for Private Exchange Forum, today is the Super Saver rate deadline. So if you want to attend this event for $99, if you're an employer, broker, advisor, you know, come to our website and sign up. A lot of good stuff, a lot of interesting debates and discussion and circling around this private exchange market. Ron, what's some of your thoughts?
Well, I think anybody who hasn't already gone to an exchange, or even if they have, the Baltimore meeting is going to be an unbelievable opportunity for them to try to connect a lot of dots. I know a lot of people are, as you said, moving with high deductible plans, but more importantly, they're moving to healthcare consumers and they're creating more choices and options within their plans. And now is a good opportunity to see how do these two movements fit together, these two mega trends of consumerism and the growth of private exchanges. Can you actually marry them? Can you improve your strategies towards healthcare consumerism by looking at what private exchanges have to offer? Are private exchanges really offering the things that employers are looking for? What problems is it looking to solve? How can it change your human resource benefits staffing and area and focus? There's so many things that are going on and questions that need to be answered for those who haven't gone into private exchanges. But even if you have gone into private exchanges, what's new and different and changing, and what are some of your options? What questions should you be asking your private exchange around the services they're offering, and what things are they adding? Because these things are morphing very rapidly with new products and services. You mentioned Aflac as a sponsor here. All the supplemental benefits, are they available on the exchange that you're on? Can you get legal insurance, dental, vision, pet care insurance, all sorts of different new products and services, financial services that are available on the exchanges? So if you're getting into sort of the defined contribution mode where you're giving employees money to go buy different products, you'll find that you know, they're choosing something different than what you may have decided to offer everybody in the past, where it's a one-size-fits-all or two or three or maybe even four choices, but now they have unlimited numbers of choices to use with the dollars that they might be spending. So that's a really important conference coming up. So I hope anybody listening in is asking themselves those same questions, and that's what this conference is intended to try to answer and help people along in that decision-making process.
Yeah, I mean, it's well said. There are so many misconceptions about, you know, the private exchange, the benefit marketplace, that's evolving. Is, you know, there's sometimes immediate pushback saying, hey, I don't know whether they can save us money, but this is where to come to understand that. Or, hey, I don't want to just have a shelf of products. You know, I want to deliver one plan and, you know, from maybe one carrier. Well, the reality is you can do all of that. I mean, whatever your benefit plan design is going to be, a marketplace platform can help you better deliver those benefits, better manage those benefits, and then provide some of the choice you're talking about after major medical, which is, you know, here's your voluntary benefits. And so how do you offer that choice in a marketplace environment? How do you offer telehealth services? How do you offer, you know, transparency? So, you know, if you're circling the wagon, or even if you don't know the questions asked, but you owe it to your CFO, you owe it to your company, you owe it to your employees to kind of figure it out. That's what we're trying to do in Baltimore. I mean, that's what we did in Dallas, we're trying to do in Baltimore. Stimulate the discussion, provide a forum, whether you're an employer, broker, advisor, consultant, TPA, health plan, you know, come here and be part of this dialogue to understand where it fits and maybe where it doesn't fit.
Well, you know, Doug, I think that's really critical, because I think a lot of the conferences that have been held about private exchanges in the past have focused more too much, let me just put it this way, they focus too much on marketing the idea of private exchanges. And I think some of those were very unsuccessful that other organizations have put on, as opposed to the way IHC is approaching this and saying, let's put all the players, you'll get contrary opinions up there. You'll find out what the problems and issues are of people who try to do it, so you can avoid those problems and issues. You know, this conference is not promoting the growth of private exchanges, but recognizing that it's a movement going on that's got a lot of uncertainty, and trying to bring together people with some answers and give the audience a participation role here to ask the questions specific to their organization so they can find out, does it work for them? Certainly owe it, like you said, to the CEO, to the CFO, to find out if there's something of value here, either now or maybe in the not-too-distant future. And as these things morph and grow and change and evolve, the timing might be right somewhere down the road. But if you don't know what's going on, if you don't understand all the issues, if you've just been hearing marketing pitches instead of real information from experts in the field, both pro and con, and case studies and problem solving that's gone on, you're going to miss the boat. So anybody out there who's really on the edge of thinking about it, been looking at it for a while, doesn't have all the answers, this is the conference, I think, that will address the concerns and questions that people have about private exchanges.
Yeah, and I think short term, you know, a key takeaway for particularly employers and those working with them is you may come away from this event with really two things. One is a improved way to administer and deliver your benefits. You could just be looking at innovative benefit admin, innovative benefit, you know, tools that are using to help you manage those benefits. I mean, that's all a part of this puzzle. It might not be bolded to a marketplace yet, but you're going to meet the innovators and the players that can help you do that. You're going to be part of that discussion. And the second part is that, you know, where I believe it's happening is marketplaces and exchanges are moving into that 1 to 5 year benefit strategy with employers, is saying, hey, it's not as much the Oklahoma land grab, I got to do it tomorrow. It's saying, hey, where does this fit? You know, where do I need to put this in? Mm-hmm. Hey, I've just put in a high deductible healthcare consumerism initiative, so I've taken that first step, and it's the natural migration, moving my employees and their families onto some marketplace at some point in time, and which logically I think it is. And I'm not proponent. I'm just saying that I think as people understand it, you know, they'll see where the fit is, you know, for their business, and also understand where does individual play, and how do you deal with your retiree benefit, you know, population? How do you deal with your pre-65 population? There's all these options emerging where really a marketplace exchange environment provides some very good choices there to serve those populations, or even in some cases to shovel your employees via a marketplace onto the government exchange. You know, and that's what marketplaces can help you do. I mean, they may be better. It may be better for you, the employer, and save you money. They may get better benefits because the subsidy is going out to a government exchange, some of your employee population. So that's all of this discussion that will take place, and you'll learn.
Yeah, you had a very successful program on exchanges in Dallas this past March, and I think this opens up an opportunity for people in different geography, maybe couldn't make it to Dallas, or people who wanted to go to Dallas and just had some other conflict. It's going to be a great program, and I think the Dallas is well-received, and I'm sure Baltimore will be as well.
Yeah. So, again, if you want to take advantage of Super Saver rates that end today, go to privateexchangeforum.com and sign up. But let's move the discussion to a real important topic, and that's managing ACA compliance. And joining us to talk about that is one of the leaders in the space, Cami Haynes with Tango Health. Cami, good morning. Cami, you there?
Maybe she's on mute.
Hey, there we go. They had me on you. How are you doing, guys?
Good, Cami. How are you doing today?
Great, thanks. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, nice to have you on. Give us a little background, or for the audience that might not know Tango, give a little background on Tango, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Tango specializes in ACA compliance services. We typically help companies that are 1,000 employees or up, pretty much because ACA compliance is really complicated, and those larger companies face even additional complications, you know, whether they have unions or multiple EINs. There's a lot of issues that they face. And what we found is that we work with our clients to do full outsourcing, because a lot of people, you know, ACA compliance is so new. HR teams weren't prepared for this, and they're usually understaffed anyway. So we provide total outsourcing. We work with companies throughout the year to make sure they're tracking eligibility, affordability, and that they're ready when the time comes for reporting.
Well, Cami, I know you guys do good work, and it's very important right now. Particularly, we got a short-term deadline coming up, June 30th. Talk a little bit about this IRS deadline coming up.
Yeah, so we're coming up on the time to file with the IRS, and this is a pretty complicated. Everything with the ACA is complicated, but this is especially complicated. So what we're finding is that if you have 250 returns, you have to file electronically with the IRS. And the IRS has made this system really challenging. So there's multiple steps, and I'll kind of give you a highlight of those. Step one is you have to file with e-services, and those are web-based tools that the IRS uses for communication for different transactions. But there's a bunch of eligibility requirements that people have to get on there. So once you do get certified with e-services, then you have to apply for what's called a TCC code. So this is a transmission code. There's two different transmission codes that you have to get. You have to get one to just test the system, and then you have to get one for your actual transmission. And once you get the codes, then you do your test communication with the IRS's AIR system, it's AIR. There's a series of scenarios you have to pass that are like word problems, but you kind of have to be at the level of a software engineer to understand how to code in XML using all these crazy acronyms like SOAP, and it has to be NIST compliant and all this other stuff. I mean, most HR people would be completely clueless about this stuff because it's way beyond their skill level. So you have to go through this test situation and get approved. There's a document to support this that's like 24 pages long and reads like a coding manual. So then the final step is, okay, you've gone through all these hurdles. Now you can submit, and you wait for a response. And so at that point, the IRS gives you back one of three responses. There's accepted with errors, and then rejected. And you get back an XML-coded file, and you have to sift through that XML to find the errors and figure out how to fix them. And there's hundreds of error codes that are possible. So it's super complicated.
So are employers doing this transmission themselves, or are they turning to, you know, organizations like yourself and outsourcing it to the Tango Healths of the world?
You know, we've done a couple of different webinar sessions, and I've talked to people at events when I'm out doing those. And different people are handling this in different ways. And as a rule, really nobody was prepared for how hard this was. And a lot of us kind of wait to the last minute. And this process, people are finding that that transmission process, getting set up for it, can take anywhere from weeks to almost months. And so, you know, people are really stuck in the process. So we did a webinar earlier this week, and I had somebody ask a question saying, we've requested our TCC code and haven't heard back. And I'm thinking, you got like 11 days. You know, you haven't even gone through the testing process. So we also heard from people that some of them had hired a vendor thinking they were turnkey, and then that vendor came back and said, well, no, you have to go get the TCC code and you have to transmit. So they're scrambling to get that done. But I would say anybody who's trying to do it themselves, you know, as I walk through that process, this is an investment in resources, you know, whether you have that software engineer that's going to help you out. It's time. It's pulling together the data. And just the headaches are ridiculous.
Well, that's crazy. Ron?
Yeah, Cammie, this is fascinating stuff, but it's very much in the weeds. Maybe for our audience out there, can you get a little bit more, you know, when I used to have very complicated things to say, I hope this isn't taken the wrong way, but I'd say I got to be able to explain it to my mother, you know, an 80-year-old mother, what I'm doing. What is it that your system is being compliant with? What are you submitting? What are the different tracks of submittals or reports that we're talking about here? I understand the process you went through is very complicated, and you really need the expertise like you have to do it. But what is the transmission all about?
Well, you know, saying that you describe this to your 80-year-old mother, I mean, I don't know if you can explain anything about the ACA compliance process to your mom and have her get it, honestly.
That's well said, Jimmy.
To put it in total simple terms, and I'm thinking most of your audience will get it if I put it this way, the ACA, Affordable Care Act, it means that every person has to have insurance, so that's the employee mandate, and the employers also have to prove that they offered eligible employees coverage. So what that means is they've had to track employees all year long to determine if they worked enough hours to be eligible for insurance. All right, already there we kind of go into the weeds because we're talking about eligibility and words like that. But the bottom line is you got to track those hours. And then, you know, we had deadlines that were originally in January moved to March that you had to send something to the employee. So if they were called upon to do so, they could prove, yes, I had coverage. And that's that 1095C form. All right, so that was the first step. And that took a lot of work just to get out. That was the first step. Then the second step is now reporting to the IRS. And what the IRS will do, they'll take – in very simple terms, you're sending every single one of those 1095Cs that you gave to your employees with kind of a cover sheet. And I always make the Office Space joke that this is your TPS cover sheet, you know. But basically, you're getting this to the IRS to say, here's who I covered, and here's the backup showing that they were told they were covered. All right, so it can be reams and reams of data, depending on the size of your company. If you're smaller, a lot of these companies that are 250 employees or less, they can do this by paper and mail it into the IRS. But then they don't have the ability to check with the IRS, you know, digitally to say, did you get it? How did I do? Does that break? Do you think your mom would get that one?
Well, let's see if I can get it. It's even harder to explain to me than it is to my mom probably. So basically what you're saying is that the Affordable Care Act has certain mandates. People have to have coverage, have to prove they have coverage. Employers have to prove they've offered it. And if they don't do the right things, either as an individual, I don't have coverage I'm supposed to, or my employer hasn't offered me, or I think most people are getting to understand that, you know, if when they're getting their hours cut back below 30 hours, that the employer's, you know, getting into a situation where they don't have to offer their insurance. So people are getting less hours. So the employer, if they don't monitor this and then report properly, the employer could be subject to some big penalties, and as individuals can be subject to penalties as well. So that's what you're really trying to solve, right? You're trying to solve the problem of being in compliance so that these penalties, which can be very complicated to figure out because there's multiple different ways to determine full-time employees and part-time employees and all that, your system is handling all that without people having to be lawyers themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you start to think of all the different variables in there, and things get super complicated around the employees themselves. And like you referenced, there are some companies that have gotten in trouble for cutting employees' hours in order to not offer insurance. But there's penalties all through this process. You're right. And they can they can get up to, you know, some places there are thresholds of $3 million, which is definitely not inconsequential. But we're talking to some people who were looking at fines in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I had somebody on a webinar the other day who was battling with this, and based on the size of her company, she was looking at over $325,000 in fines.
Right. Yeah. So I know selling your service. Go ahead, Doug.
I was just gonna say. So Cammie, the end goal is helping the employers transmit and get approval from the IRS. I mean, that's the end goal right now on this current deadline.
That's the step we're at right now. Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, and what the IRS does is they use this as a checking process. So they're kind of creating a loop here to see, you know, what you sent the employee, what the employee claims on their taxes, and then, you know, whether all of this comes together to create a circular reference to say, all right, the individual said they recovered, you say you covered them, and this shows what you sent to them to tell them they recovered. So it's making that reference so that they can see.
Cammie, if we've got employers, as we do, listening on this program, and they're struggling with this, is it too late for them to reach out to somebody like yourself to help?
No, it's not too late. But what we're running up against at this point, you know, is that you're going to probably be looking at some kind of penalties. Again, we are transmitting on behalf of our employers. So anybody who comes to us doesn't have to get a TCC code. But we're kind of at the point of we're going to have to take your word for what we're transmitting. For our customers, we've been working with them to get their data cleaned up, make sure it's scrubbed, minimizing those penalties. Somebody coming to us this late in the game, we can't vouch for that data. So we're going to be at the point where you can send me your stuff, we can try to transmit, we can try to parse through that, and you'll have somebody to hold your hand parsing through that, but we can't guarantee that what you've done so far this year is going to be accurate. You know, we've been working with our clients over the course of the whole year to get stuff cleaned up.
Okay, got it.
So how accommodating is the IRS on this? When they have problems, how accommodating is the IRS on problems and issues that come up do they just want penalties? I mean, obviously, it's a very complicated process, and there could be disputes about whether there's an error or not. How is the IRS to work with?
Well, you know, they're pretty much the law. They get to see how it is. And, you know, accommodating and IRS don't usually go together. You know, those guys pretty much figure you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. I think a good example of that is that, you know, they're coming back to you and saying you have these errors and you have 60 days to correct and send us back. And it's not like they're going to negotiate with you on this. There's a couple of places where they've recognized there are things that are hard to fix. So, for example, matching names to Social Security numbers. If you hire somebody on and, you know, they go through the process of showing their I-9 or their Social Security card, and then you go to file using the name and social that they gave you, if that doesn't match up and the system kicks it back, you've got a couple of opportunities to update that within that time window. But they have said if you check three times, you try to get the information from the employee and you can't, there's other options. So there's a little bit of wiggle room there, but it's not a lot. And that's one of the very few places that they'll wiggle.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Cammie, let's look beyond this. I mean, you know, I think you've covered this pretty well about this current deadline and helping employers transition the challenge to IRS. So what's on the horizon next that employers need to be concerned about around HSA compliance and what you're helping your clients with right now?
So I think the key is that everybody's really been exhausted by this process. You know, there's three main things that I think are really worrying people about ACA compliance. You know, it's like one of them is I'm still in the middle of doing this. I'm trying to get a transmission done by the end of June. I'm working through corrections or whatever else. I'm worried about subsidy notices, so I'm still cranking through 2015 compliance and just trying to get that done. The people who've gotten over the finish line are just exhausted. You know, this has been a nightmare for everybody, and they want to just go sit in a lounge chair on a beach someplace and not think about it. And then the other thing is people are worried about what does the election mean? You know, you've got a lot of ruckus around what's going to happen next, and people are kind of hoping that if they put their head in the sand, the ACA is going to go away. But it's not. It's going to be a lot harder to uncouple because people like to have insurance. There have been a lot of articles written and studies showing that this is not going to be a simple thing to undo. And even if it gets undone, it's not going to get undone in time because you're still going to have to report for 2016. So I would just say that what people need to be looking at is not taking a break. They need to be continuing to work forward to compliance for 2016. They need to be tracking eligibility. We're already at June. If there was someone that they should have offered coverage to in February, there's a monthly fine for not offering that coverage. And if they haven't been tracking eligibility and they missed it, they're in trouble. So people just need to not pause. I make an example of, I'm not going to show up at my accountant on April 14th and try to get my taxes done in one day. This is a complicated thing. It's 10 times more, 100 times more complicated than my taxes. People need to be thinking about this now and planning for it so it's not so painful when January rolls around.
We got time for about one more question here, and Kim, I can't let you off the phone without talking about the Cadillac tax. And how are you advising your clients to deal with the potential of the upcoming Cadillac tax? I mean, I think some want to keep kicking the can down the road. So how are you advising it? What are you talking to your clients?
It is a great question. And people do wonder, is that may be one of the pieces of the ACA that goes away first. But I think that there's a good opportunity here with the Cadillac tax, especially for CFOs and CHROs to look at the benefits that they're offering their employees and determine what's over that threshold or what's trending towards that threshold. And it gives them an opportunity to look at their overall offerings and find out, say, for example, high deductible plans are something that are really popular with people. How do you make your employee understand the value of that high deductible plan to them? And that's something we've worked with a number of customers on. Employees don't understand them, and they're not going to change. They've got that inertia to just sit in the PPO plan they're in. So you really have to educate them on what the change means for them, show them the value. And we've got some calculators that we've used, and we've seen that when people see that they're only going to save about $500 in that high deductible plan, it's not worth changing. But when they see that they can save maybe $1,000 or more, they're a lot more liable to change. And so working with your employee base to help them understand, getting them educated about the plans, helping them and assisting them with the tools they need to make the right choice for them, it saves money for the employee overall. And the good thing is that saves money for the company and reduces that likelihood of the Cadillac tax.
No, that's good. Well, Cammy, it's been great having you on the program again. Always nice to talk to you and catch up. And you're helping employers address a very important area of their business, one that they probably would rather not deal with, but they have to deal with. I'd like to give you an opportunity to leave our audience with a few takeaways, please.
Yeah, sure. I think that the most important thing here is just to remind people that the ACA stuff is challenging. You shouldn't be tackling this yourself. You leave yourself open to fines and penalties, and your CFO is going to be a lot more liable to approve the cost of fixing this problem than they are to look at those, hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines. And just to think that this is something that we're all going to have to deal with. I'm sure that when everybody went through the W-2 process, it was just as challenging. But just stay on top of it and be the master of your domain. Get in charge.
And if somebody's listening and wants to get in touch with you, how do they connect with you, please?
Yeah, absolutely. They can. The company is Tango Health, and we're at www.tangohealth.com. They can email me directly at khayness@tangohealth.com, or we've got just an info@tangohealth.com email address. They can send a note.
All right. Great, Cammy. Listen, enjoyed having you on the program. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks again, guys.
Take care. Ron, the complexities of ACA, right? And
really?
the immovable object, me and the IRS, right?
Yeah, but isn't their name just the perfect name for the dance that they have to go through with the IRS? Tango Health. it is awfully difficult dealing with those government agencies. I can see a whole other service available. When you owe the IRS as an individual a lot of tax money, there are these advertisements you hear on the radio all the time about organizations that will help you lower your tax bill to the IRS. I think as these penalties accumulate for various organizations, I don't know if Tango Health is offering help with lowering and negotiating. She said the IRS doesn't negotiate much, but I'm sure that there are services out there that are offering employers to save them a couple of millions or tens of millions of dollars because of penalties that they can dispute. And I think we'll also be going to court cases. I think a lot of companies will say, wait, I was in compliance. And the IRS will say, no, you're not. And we'll wind up going to court in a lot of this. So it's a lawyer's dream. It's a lawyer's retirement program to set up, and just it's also for consultants. A lot of opportunity exists in those businesses when you have something as complicated as this. But Tango's really doing a service. I mean, if you think about it, being in HR, especially, you know, you're not a mega company. You don't have tens of thousands of employees and unlimited HR budgets. You know, you need a service like this. And I think this legal compliance area is absolutely critical to avoid the penalties. I'd rather be paying consultant fees if I was in that position than going to my CEO and tell him, oh, I got a couple hundred thousand or a couple million dollars in penalties. All of a sudden, I think my job's on the line at that point.
Yeah. Well, let's turn the page. And by the way, if you want to spend some time with Tango and even attend a workshop to really get deeper into this, they will be at IHC Forum West, November 8th through 9th, out in Las Vegas. As will our next guest on the program. Joining us on the program is a return guest, Seth Ravine, Chief Revenue Officer with Aclara. Seth, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing great.
Great.
You coming to us from Minneapolis today?
I am. Sunshine State, so it's wonderful.
Yeah. this is a great time of the year to be in Minneapolis.
Yeah, this is probably the best time of year to be in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Well, Seth, listen, great to have you on again. For our audience that, you know, may be listening for the first time, give a little background on Aclara, and then we'll kind of jump into what you're doing here with this new benchmarking tool.
That's great. Aclara provides the services and technology to enable our clients to provide a white label offering around account-based health plans. So whether it's an HSA, FSA, HRA, or any type of employee reimbursement plan, they can put their brand on it, and we will do the technology and services. And we provide services within the financial institutions, health plans, TPAs, brokers, and consultants. And now as part of Willis Towers Watson, extended reach out into the broker space and into employers.
Yeah. Seth, now talk about this new benchmarking tool that you guys, have launched in the marketplace, and, you know, what that is and, you know, what is driving the interest around it.
Yeah, you know, you just heard from Tango and the complexities that our employers are facing in their day-to-day business environment. You know, our clients, being the aggregators, and their clients, the employers, are asking for the insights that are really going to drive action and the right behaviors within, you know, designing their health plans. And so the benchmarking tool really represents an augmentation of our existing reporting tools that puts, you know, real life or ad hoc reporting into the hands of business users so they can make strategic decisions about their plan designs within the context of market trends. And that's really the key right now for our employer groups. Really, how do I take the insights and the data and then turn those into actions that are going to benefit my employees?
Yeah. Ron?
Yeah, Seth, Ron Bachman here. Welcome to the program again. How do the benefits administration people, how do they actually use this benchmarking tool? Is it something that's on the computer daily, is updated every 24 hours, updated continuously? And what does it really show them? What does the benchmarking tool look like as best you can describe it on a radio program?
Yeah, you know, the key to this is that it's simple and clean. So through their Aclaris portal, they'll have access to the benchmarking tool. And it's just in addition to our already existing reporting library. But what this does is that on a nightly basis, as we refresh our total book of business, they can run a variety of reports that not only shows, whether it's at the employer level or if they're an aggregator across their book of business, how the trends are looking, but then also compare that to the total Aclaris book of business. And why that's unique is, you know, this is really meant to be for non-technical, you know, non-analytical business users who want to think about, ask the questions, what's going on in my business and why is something happening?
Seth, is this tool available right now? Is it available
now?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. We've rolled it out into through our beta and is now open to general release.
So what are some of the trends that you're seeing? Are the geographical trends in benefit designs, or Are there industry trends? What are some of the things that maybe you could share with the audience that your tool is turning up for the marketplace as a whole?
Yeah, you know, and the tool itself is not meant to be the, you know, solve the, you know, every amazing question that we have for the industry. What it's really meant to do is help companies look at, you know, maybe a couple key areas. You know, if I think about demographics, and, you know, at Aclaris, we have a unique set of clients. So we have people who are in the financial institutions, we have health plans, we have, you know, the brokers and consultants, et cetera, and TPAs, who all have different goals in why they're going to market to support account-based health plans. And so what this tool really is meant to drive is, as an employer or as an aggregator, I want to understand, you know, why is my population of spenders versus savers in line mm-hmm. with the market or out of the market? And so, you know, all the trends are very similar to what we see, you know, reported in the industry. I haven't seen anything that would stand out as, you know, truly unique at this point. But more importantly, when I look at different employer groups and I look at different aggregators, we do see different behaviors. So who's using the accounts? You know, we've been doing webinar series on millennials and baby boomers, and there's a lot of data out there today of, you know, how younger employees are not taking advantage of you know, of the HSAs, where baby boomers mm-hmm. are starting to catch up and put more money into this. You see behavioral, you know, trends. So, you know, who is contributing and withdrawal? Are people using an HSA as a true savings account, or are they using it as a spending account? And then we're seeing a lot of operational data, you know, things such as, you know, from a debit card usage, you know, are people submitting claims through debit cards? Are they using this in a consumer-friendly way, or are we still making mm-hmm. the consumers and the employees jump through hurdles and submit paper and have a poor experience? And then what are the substantiation rates? How can we help the employers, you know, create, you know, clean plan designs on HRAs and on the employee reimbursement plans that, you know, make it a seamless experience for the employee? And so, again, no revolutionary insight that has come out of it that I've seen yet, but really putting the power to down to our, you know, one of our 6,700 employer groups for them to say, hey, am I the best at what I do or am I the worst at what I do?
Right. Well, that sounds pretty revolutionary to find some information like that. I mean, your employers have been struggling to get that kind of information. So from that standpoint, at the employer level, it probably is new and revolutionary for them. So they're not focusing on industry studies, but on their own experience and then relating it, like you said, to some industry benchmarks. So I think that's pretty cool stuff that's going on. What are employers asking you to do to add to that, or what do you see going on in the future as far as new benchmarks or new data? Is there anything new on the horizon that you're thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, we're building a library of reports that they can kind of, or, you know, the queries that they can pull from. Yeah, so we see right now the key ones would be, you know, cash versus investment, activation rates, what are the mm-hmm. contributions, the quarterly contributions and withdrawals, things around vintage balances in accounts, and then that saver versus spender. And so, you know, mm-hmm. and we continue, you know, I believe the library is getting close to 40 reports or will be by the end of this year. And then we'll mm-hmm. continue to build on that and allow people to cut the data however they want. You know, the one thing we do want to keep in mind with this tool is, you know, we don't want to overwhelm our business users. This is not meant for, this is really a tool meant for a non-technical non-analytical person to get access mm-hmm. to those insights quickly and to then make strategic decisions, whether that's, you know, looking at their benefits that they're providing, creating incentives for people to engage in their account-based health plans in a different way, or, you know, to identify what best practices they are, you know, they do have and, you know, amplify those.
Okay. Doug?
Yeah, it's... So what's next, Seth, for you guys? What's coming next? What are you seeing in the market? You guys are very well positioned in this market with where the market is embracing account-based plans. The market's moving, and you're part of the Willis Towers, Watson family, as you said. Exciting times for Clara. So, what's next?
You know, so our goal right now within Aclaris product is, you know, really how do we simplify the experience for the consumer, and how do we make our employers and aggregator clients efficient and effective in what they do? Account-based health plans isn't, you know, the center of the universe for HR administrator's lifestyle, you know, everyday job, right? What they want is a product that is simple to use, has, you know, the highest operational excellence, and, you know, and makes their consumers' lives better for today and in the future. And so, you know, really looking at trying to build, you know, with the help of Willis Towers Watson, with the investments that they're making within Aclaris, where can we take the product to make a more holistic approach and platform for the consumer, and thus, you know, trickle-down effect to the employer's life. We'll have less noise, happier consumers, and, you know, people who are actually starting to plan for the future and use their healthcare dollars wisely.
Yeah, and happier employers too, right? They have a tremendous challenge with managing all this, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's really, you know, for us, you know, the consumer experience is the tip of the spear. And if you're not delighting the consumer, you're not delighting the employer, you're not delighting our aggregators, and then, you know, Dean Mason's not happy. So it all trickles down from there.
Yeah, I agree. Exciting times. How do you, when you look out at the changing exchange and marketplace environment, how do you guys see that from Aclaris' seat? You know, I mean, obviously Willis Towers Watson's right in the middle of it. So where do you see that space
that's,
right now?
Yeah, I don't how much time do we have? And I think I have to be careful on this one, Doug. You know, I'm a big proponent that the individual needs to continue to take on more, or is going to be asked to take on more and more responsibility of how they spend their healthcare dollars. And if the employers, if ACA, if everyone is going to push that burden onto the individual, we need to provide the tools and technology to enable consumers to make the smart decisions for them. And so, you know, I believe that employer groups, you know, looking at private exchanges specifically, I'm not going to touch on the public. There's just too much out there on the public. But in the private sector, the private exchanges, you know, I really believe that, you know, getting to a defined contribution type model, giving consumers what they want, the money to spend the way they want to spend, and then to help let them prioritize it is really important. But if we don't give them the tools and education to make smart decisions, you know, then the industry is going to really lag behind where it could be in the next 3 to 5 years. That adoption will really slow.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. Hey, Seth, it's been great having you on the program again. I want to give you a chance to kind of recap and leave our audience with a few takeaways, if you would, please.
Yeah, it's great. You know, so the, you know, benchmarking tools have been in the industry before. You know, what really makes this tool special and what we want to start talking to our clients about is, you know, what are the insights that we can turn into action to enable them to have higher utilizations of the account-based health plans, to really understand, you know, ask the questions of how this is working and why it's working, and then let's build out a plan together to go solve this and really improve the experience for the consumer and for the employer and for our clients, the aggregators. So, you know, this is a easy-to-use, clean tool. We're very excited about it.
Let our listeners know how they can reach out to you.
Yeah, so they can contact me at seth.ravine@aclaris.com, and that's ACCLARIS.com. We also have sales@aclaris.com if they want any information. And they can go to our website, www.aclaris.com.
Seth, great having you on the program. We hope we'll see you soon at one of our upcoming events. You have a great weekend, okay?
Yeah, you too. Happy Father's Day to both of you.
Yeah, you too, Seth.
You too.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Take care. Good stuff, Ron. I mean, you see, you know, again, the continued evolution, and I think, you know, focus here on that. It's interesting to hear you see Aclaris, who primarily has been working directly with administrators, now saying, hey, how do we help employers, you know, through with their administrators, and how do we keep our eyeballs right on that consumer and help that consumer experience, you know, be successful and make them happy.
Yeah, you know, the link between these two presentations is always interesting, the way Jonathan puts these programs together. But I think they really are linked here, showing how technology can handle all the confusion behind the scenes so that we can deal with how do we actually help people? How do we help people with the actual use of their HSA dollars in this particular case? I mean, because if you just have a high deductible and you have an account, but you don't know how you best you should save for the account, or once you have the money in there, should you use it? Should you not use it? How do I use it? How do I access it? What's it available for? Whether it's not. If you don't understand that, then this whole idea of healthcare consumerism loses a tremendous flexibility in having an account-based plan. So that's not just some high deductible plan, and I'm going to save all this money for when I retire or something. It's really dollars that should be used at an appropriate time in an appropriate way. And I think that Aclaris is doing a great job of simplifying the whole process, and is also part of the educational process, some would call it the health literacy, all of us understanding how best to use our health and healthcare plans along with these accounts that are there. So I think they're doing a real great service in trying to move this whole industry forward and getting people more engaged in lots of different ways of understanding their accounts and then how to better utilize them. So I think this whole technology growth that we're seeing, all this investment from different organizations trying to simplify things, at the end of the day, I think that's what's really going to make this whole thing work for individuals, because it's just a very complicated mess out there with healthcare, whether it's dealing with the IRS or it's dealing with your banker and your bank account on your account-based plans.
Yep, and again, Aclaris will be with us both in Baltimore, Private Exchange Forum, and IC Forum West. If you want to have a more in-depth discussion with them, please join us there, or reach out to them per Seth's email, and Tango will be with us at IC Forum West. And a reminder as we close this program that Super Saver ends to date on Private Exchange Forum West, Private Exchange Forum in Baltimore, September 8th through 9th. And IHC Forum West, November 8th through 9th, Super Saver rates are open there. So you can find both these events at www.theihccforum.com. We appreciate everyone being on the program today. Enjoy your summer weekend, and we'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.